Welcome to this week's episode of The Nerdy Rat. This week we're going to be talking some about pink-eyed whites, just giving some general updates on our Rat Pack, talking about Spider-Man Homecoming. The movie just came out and we just saw it, so here we go.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 9
of the Nerdy Rat at thenerdyrat.com.
It's July 11th, 2017. It's Tuesday.
Yep.
And let's get into it.
So we were going to talk some this week about pink-eyed whites. So why don't you tell me again, because you've said it before and I forget, how come pink-eyed whites are only domesticated rats? Why aren't they wild rats?
Well, I think you could technically find a pink-eyed white or an albino rat out in the wild, but the problem with a lot of them is they usually die because they're more susceptible to being picked off by predators because they stick out.
Right, because they don't have camouflage.
Now, I've read some of the history of pet rats, and the way we got pet rats really was the rat catchers back in the 1800s, 1900s would basically their way of getting rid of rats in the city was to catch them and kill them basically. But every now and then they'd see like a variation, like a pink-eyed white or a hooded or a different looking rat, and they would keep those as pets and they would breed them as pet rats.
Wow.
So that's how we get a lot of the variations that we see today, like the agouti, the hooded, the different ear types, the top-eared versus Dumbo.
Oh, okay.
So it's not that it's impossible, but it's highly unlikely that you would see one of the a variation like that out in the wild rat, because typically all the wild rats generally look the same. Because the ones that would look different, if it was a pink-eyed white mutation out in the wild, it generally probably would die before it could have a lot of babies.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Whereas pink-eyed whites are largely bred for in laboratories too. They use them a lot of the laboratory rats that are highly controlled and a lot of them are free of myco and stuff like that. A lot of those are all pink-eyed whites.
Interesting.
And they did a study where they actually, there's a video on YouTube you can look up where they took a colony of lab rats and released them out into this kind of wild area, and they actually thrived pretty well, and they were all pink-eyed whites because that's what they all were, and they actually survived and continued to breed in the wild.
Why did they survive?
I mean, they just adapted. I mean, they were
because there were so many of them.
Yeah, and because there were so many of them, they kind of all, but if you have one white rat in with a bunch of brown rats, probably the white rat's going to be picked out by predators. So.
Yeah,
It's not impossible, but usually when you see a traditionally pet rat out in the wild, it's probably because somebody released it. So.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. Well, and one thing we were going to talk about with pink-eyed whites this week is that they can have vision problems. A lot of times they're blind or they have very low vision.
Their eyesight is very poor. And an indicator of that a lot of times too is you will see them kind of bob their head back and forth.
Right.
Some do it more than others, I've noticed. Some will really do it a lot and some will hardly do it at all. It's just they have bad vision, and what they're doing is they're trying to look at you basically, because a rat's eyes actually look in all directions and they operate independently of each other. If you ever shine a light in a rat's eye, you can see their iris. It's a little creepy when you shine a light on it.
Don't do that.
See
that's mean.
Well, yeah, don't do that. But
no, don't ever shine a light in your rat's eye, humans who are listening to this show. No, don't.
I'm
do
just
that.
Saying if you catch the light right,
in an
eye, you can see the iris, and you can see that it actually moves separately from each other. So because the way their vision works is they can see stuff that's overhead of them,
on top of them, so they can see predators coming
to get them. So when they're moving back and forth, they're basically trying to look at you with both eyes to kind of see where you are, because their vision isn't great.
Right.
And the poor vision just comes. It's they have no melanin or whatever in their iris, so it makes it harder for them to see.
Yeah.
But you know, we've had a lot of pink-eyed whites over the years, and I had one early on that was kind of bitey, and so I kind of had like a poor opinion of them, but all the ones I've had since then have been super sweet, and I don't think their temperament is really affected by the fact that they're pink-eyed whites. We've had so many that were just the sweetest rats ever. Like, one of the first ones I had recently after moving up here was Mag.
Uh-huh,
and
yeah.
I only got her because she was the last rat left in the bin with Kaylee. It was her and Kaylee, and Kaylee was a hooded, and Mag was this little tiny baby pink-eyed white rat. So I got both of them, and she ended up being this huge fat mama rat.
Yeah, she was one of the biggest rats we ever had, actually. Although Mega K might have beat her, but Mag was a big girl. Mag was a big girl, and she was definitely queen of the cage.
Sweet too.
She was. She was the alpha, but she was a very sweet girl.
She ended up being. She had the greatest personality of some of my rats.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think all of our rats tend to have very nice personalities. Although we have the babies right now, who are not really babies anymore, but we keep calling them that because they're Nim's babies. We got them when they were babies.
Yeah, they're gonna always kind of be babies.
They're spoiled.
They haven't gotten real big either. They've kind of stayed around.
No, they've kind of stayed very
340
tiny.
340 grams. Like,
yeah, so they're staying little girls. So
well, Nim's not huge either.
She's not actually. Some of the babies tend to look almost as big as she is, or a little bit bigger.
I just recently weighed them all, so I know all their weights. But Nim's like 380, and then all of her kids are like 340 grams.
Yeah, they're still tiny little girls. But aside from, and they're still sweethearts. I mean, they're absolute sweethearts, but they're a little finicky and spoiled with their cage mates sometimes, as we've talked about.
Pink-eyed whites too. Like, there's not really anything you need to worry about medically for a pink-eyed white other than their poor vision, which all rats have pretty poor vision anyways.
Yeah, but
I think it's more pronounced on the pink-eyed whites.
It is. And some people I've seen on the rat forums are confused. Like, they startle their rats, the pink-eyed ones, more easily than they startle their other rats.
Also,
so you have to be sure that you put, like, your fist in front of them so they can smell your fist so you don't scare them.
I think it's more to... a lot of people will notice the head wobble,
right,
and think that there's something wrong with them, and it's not. It's normal for them to do that.
They're either like sniffing, or they're just trying to use what limited vision they have.
They're trying to see because
trying to get sense, or they're just trying to like focus and see you because they can't see that well. Now there is a thing with the head tilt that comes from an infection. That's different though. That's not them sniffing their heads
around. I
think
that's more of just a tilt more than moving, because
it's not moving their heads. It's almost like their head is flopped over a little bit.
It almost looks like they're like a cat getting ready to pounce, the way they move their head back and forth, just kind of like shaking it back and forth.
When it's not the head tilt. Right. And it's just kind of like, to me, it looks like the prairie dogs at the zoo, like they're sniffing the air, like they're sniffing around for predators. They're just like, you know, they're like checking out their territory, and they're using all their other senses because their vision tends to be a little limited. So, you know, they're probably listening to you. They're just trying to do whatever they can to assess the situation. So, yeah, just with, especially with your pink-eyed whites, make sure that you give them a fist first so that they know you're there. Talk to them so they know you're, you know, just don't startle them. Because they might bite if they're startled, but they're not biting because they're bad. They're just like, they need to know you're there.
Yeah, just be aware of that they're going to have not as good vision as normal rats. And overall, I think... I like pink-eyed whites.
Me too. We've had a lot over the years, actually. And we have a lot right now in our cage. Yeah, we have four in our cage right now.
And
we just had Athena, who passed not that long ago, who we talked about. But Athena was one of our Twilight rats. He was a big girl. She was the pink-eyed white.
She was odd-eyed, too, wasn't she?
Was she odd-eyed? She was Siamese, or whatever it's called. I don't know if it's called Himalayan. Is it called Himalayan?
Yeah, Himalayan or Siamese. It's just when they have the
little spot on their nose,
and they're mostly white. But there was a bunch of girls that we used to have that were odd-eyed that would have one pink eye and one normal eye.
Right.
And they were kind of a mix between pink-eyed whites and like hooded.
Now, Sarah Jane had a little bit of a hood, right?
She did.
She had like a half hood
on one side of her face. Yeah. And that's the thing about rats, too, is you'll often see mixes between the different characteristics. Like, right now we have Fievel, who is kind of a mix between a Rex and a hairless.
Yeah,
because he's got some of his fur is like Rex fur, and then he's got the whiskers like a Rex.
Yeah, like a Rex.
He's
got, but then a lot of them is bald. Pink-eyed white too. Yeah, and he's peach fuzz, and he's a pink-eyed white,
and Dumbo ears,
and Dumbo ears. He's just a special little boy.
Yeah, and you'll see that too, because when people breed them together, you end up with a lot of these mixes of like
that makes
they'll
sense.
Have characteristics of one or the other.
Right. They kind of tend to get an amalgam of them. Now, Fievel, I was commenting on this week to you because he started out very submissive with all the other rats, and he's still a submissive little boy, but he's assertive because his skin is much more sensitive because he doesn't have all the fur. So I have heard him sometimes really squawk at the other rats and like scold them, but I'm glad he does because he's not doing it to be mean. He's just doing it like if their toenails are too sharp or somebody's grooming him and it's hurting him. But you know what? I saw the sweetest thing one time this week because he did it to Pinky, who happens to be another one of our pink-eyed whites. And she's one of the little babies who tends to be a little spoiled. But she was so upset that she had upset him. She crouched down and gave him a submissive pose. Like, she crouched next to him, like, clearly being submissive. And then she got in front of him and put her little head under his chin to be all submissive, to, like, apologize to him. And I was like, oh, she loves him. Because she would not do that to Toro. Trust me. She does not get along super well with Toro. But I thought that was so sweet. And then Fievel is such a sweet boy because he didn't, like, try to bite her or pin her or anything. And he, like, sat there and let her apologize. And then he was, like, kiss-kissy with her again. And I was like, oh, that was the sweetest little thing to me, to see her actually, like, deliberately being submissive to him to say that she was sorry.
Yeah, we seem to have a little bit more drama now that we're up to 9 rats in our cage.
But you know what? We talked about this another episode, too. I don't really know that it's the number of rats. I think it's because the babies were spoiled by our very submissive old lady, Doreen, and Tippy Toe, and Athena.
Well, and we've had rats from a number of different sources, too, that
now
raised
we have
together.
Yeah, now we have two boys who were brothers, and then we have Toro, who's another boy who was raised alone. And so there is just more
and
drama in
the
cage the now.
Yeah. I mean, it's not too bad. Nobody's really hurting anybody.
Nobody hurts each other, but I've been noticing that Toro still is hesitant to get into the hammocks and snuggle with the other rats when they're in there.
Well, he's still adjusting. He was alone for so long.
I think a year.
I think he still likes having his time to himself too.
He probably does. And I mean, there's times throughout the day when pretty much all the rats are alone, sleeping alone. So I think, you know, probably every rat likes some alone time.
Yeah.
But but I've still been trying to be to snuggle with him in the bonding pouch almost every night with like at least one of the other rats, because I want him to just feel comfortable snuggling, and I want them to get more comfortable with him.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was thinking we have representatives of almost all the different rats in our
Do
personal
we?
Rats now.
Wow. Yeah, we have a lot of
different
rats.
We have both ear types.
Variety.
We have both fur types. We have naked. We have hooded. We have solid colors.
Right. Yeah, we have a lot.
We have almost all of them in our 9
almost
rats.
Almost all of them. We have male and female. we're doing good.
Oh, let's talk about our new fosters that we just got today.
Yeah, well, you'll have to talk a little more about them because I haven't interacted with them that much.
They're two adult male Dumbo-eared. One is hooded and one is mostly solid.
Mm-hmm.
One is a light gray or...
kind of like a medium gray, I guess.
One's like a lighter gray hooded and white.
Yeah, he's
kind of
speckled on his back
gray.
Too. Like, he's hooded, but he's got some speckles.
They're
really pretty.
They're brothers, and they get along well.
Now, they're not
fixed. But
so far, there's no fighting.
We're estimating they're around 15 months.
Oh, really? That old?
That's what Teresa thought.
Yeah. Now, so, by the way, in case you don't listen to us regularly, we foster with Small Angels Rescue, which is a no-kill rat shelter. And so we hold on to them, you know, as foster parents until somebody adopts them through the rescue.
And if they don't get adopted, they'll get put into our Twilight program and stay with a foster family till they pass.
Yeah. Now, these got accepted into the rescue because the family was moving overseas and they weren't allowed to take the rats with them.
Yeah, I think they said they were moving to China. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you can't really take animals across borders like that.
No, no. And that's really difficult because, I mean, especially a rat's life is so short. I mean, with a dog or cat, you might be able to do a quarantine or something with them.
I'm not sure in China, but I know in some places you can't even keep rats as pets.
Oh, like, interesting.
I think it was Japan where they were saying that they had a real problem with, like, you could get hamsters and other small pets.
Oh, okay,
but you
rats,
couldn't have rats. I don't remember if it was Japan or it was an Asian country, but I don't remember which.
Yeah, well, and that, I think it kind of depends on if the population has gotten out of control in the wild at some point, or you had breeders who were letting them go, or people who weren't responsible. I mean, yeah, so like we've always said on this show too, you always want to make sure before you adopt any kind of animal, if you're renting or even if you're in a neighborhood, that it's an animal that's allowed in your neighborhood, in your housing community, wherever you live, you know?
Yeah. So.
Yeah, but so we got these two sweet little boys. Apparently, they're very snuggly. Oh, I see one of them right now just starting to explore his hammock. Oh, he got in. He got into his hammock.
That's hummus,
right?
Hummus, yeah.
Yeah, their names are Willow and Hummus, which I think is so cute.
Yeah, they're both really sweet. I was holding Willow earlier.
Oh, good. And, okay.
They're very used to people. They're very friendly. They'd be good rats if somebody was like a first-time rat owner because they're already used to people.
Yeah.
And they don't really have any major issues. Their breathing is good. They don't have any scabs from mites or anything. Mm-hmm. We did treat them with Revolution.
Yeah.
But they seem to be very healthy boys.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll probably get adopted pretty quickly because they're very cute.
I hope so.
They've got Dumbo ears.
They are very pretty and they're big. They're like chubble wubs.
Yeah. Now, well, I know you haven't seen a lot of adult male rats.
I haven't because that is the normal size
for a full grown adult.
Oh, okay. Because see, when I first met Matt, he had his own pack, which was all female rats. And then most of the fosters he had at that point were females.
Well,
so.
I traditionally always had female and when I first started fostering, I was almost fostering exclusively female.
Okay.
I did start to foster a couple of boys after that. I had a pair of Gus and Gary and Gus, which I had before I met you. And they were the same size. They were about the same.
They were this size too.
But that's it. Now I've seen some enormous size rats. Especially like I was in a PetSmart and they had some male rats that were full grown. And I swear they were like a foot long.
Oh my gosh.
They were incredibly large. I felt bad for them because they were.
Yeah. I feel bad for any animal in a PetSmart. But.
Yeah. I mean, because nobody seemed interested in getting them. But
I know.
Yeah. But no, that is a good healthy size for a male rat. The males do get quite a bit bigger than the girls do.
Yeah. Well, actually, when I think about it, Peter's pretty big in our cage. And Fievel's actually pretty big, although he doesn't look like it at times because he's mostly hairless.
Well, Peter and Fievel are smaller than Toro and smaller than these boys.
They're smaller than Toro? I thought Toro was kind of a small boy.
I think Toro's our biggest rat.
Really? I thought Peter was bigger than him. I didn't weigh the boys.
Maybe it
could just be visually too. Oh, maybe because of the Rex fur, Peter looks bigger because he's got that curly fur. And so he just looks like he poofs
up
a little bit
more.
I'm
pretty sure Toro is the biggest rat we have. But
interesting. Because I always felt like he was kind of a petite little boy.
No, he's a fleshed out.
He is a mama's boy, is what he is. He loves his mommy. Yeah. Like every time he sees me, he comes running up to say hi, and he's like, "Oh, mommy, I love you. I love you so much."
Wasn't his owner a female?
I don't know. I think maybe a married couple, but yeah, a female.
I think maybe.
Yeah. But maybe also, like, I really did a lot to bond with him because when I was the only one to adopt him, and I convinced Matt.
Oh, yeah, you fell in love with him the moment we brought him home.
I fell in love with him from that video you sent me of him.
This is the danger of fostering is you end up wanting to keep all the animals.
But you know what, Toro, I'm really glad we kept him because it's been hard for him to adjust to living with other rats, and he's doing pretty well, but like he still really needs a lot of that nurturing. Like I do a lot of time with him with the bonding
pouch.
Yeah,
he's probably better off in a cage with a number of different rats that he can build relationships with rather than being stuck with one rat that maybe he doesn't get along with
that was exactly my feeling when I wanted to adopt him, and I thought too, like, I know I'm gonna give him the love and attention to help him acclimate that he needs, and you will too, and it's like I knew both of us being such experienced rat parents that we could really help him and give him a good home. So
yeah
Yeah, so he's doing well, but I just still like I'm still working with him to try to feel a little bit more comfortable socializing with everybody.
Yeah,
I do see him socializing more frequently though. Like he'll be in the hammock sometimes or in the box sometimes. He was in the hammock with
somebody earlier.
Yeah, yeah, he's getting a little braver.
It takes time. It doesn't happen overnight.
No, but he always loves when I snuggle with him in the bonding pouch because he's getting to snuggle with the other ratties and then they don't like run away from him or squeak at him in there. So he's very pleased. He's always like, oh, I'm so excited. I'm in the bonding pouch with some ratties and I got my mommy.
So you wanted to talk about there's another story with the
local
the bald
animal
eagles,
news.
Right?
Yeah. So the drama this week on the bald eagle.
The bald eagle update with the nerdy rat.
Yes. In the Washington, D.C. bald eagle update. So there was an injured bald eagle that somebody found in D.C. And I guess they were able to capture it because it was that badly injured or whatever. So it's getting rehabbed. I think it's in rehab right now. Either in Delaware, New Jersey. I think in Delaware. It's in like a wildlife rehab center. But the drama on the Eagle Group was that they're wondering if it's Justice, who is apparently an eagle from one of the other nests in DC that doesn't have like a 24-hour cam on it. It's not exactly a baby because it's got the white and the black markings on it. So it's, you know, so I'm not exactly sure. Now, some people were saying today that they thought that Justice was still in his nest because they saw a pair of eagles in the nest over there. So I don't know. It's drama. Nobody knows. But either it is the local eagle Justice and he's getting rehabilitated, or it's a new eagle coming to the area to move in because we are having at least two nested pairs in the area. So
this is exciting that like there's so many bald eagles now.
I think it's really cool because like I think I've said on another podcast, when I was a kid, I thought bald eagles only lived out west. Like I had no idea they even could live in our area because I didn't think we had the right climate or conditions or whatever for them. So apparently we do, and they're thriving. Oh, and by the way, we're going to post a link. They are having a Kickstarter or something to raise money to get a camera on the second nest so that you could also tune into the second nest 24/7 and catch all the updates in the next breeding season and things like that. So yes, if you're interested in contributing to that so that you too can be an eagle watcher, you go right ahead and do that.
I'll include that in the show notes.
Yes, that'll be in the show notes for anyone who wants to become equally addicted to the Eagle Cam.
Yeah, and you can join the Facebook groups and post pictures that you capture from the webcam.
That's right, your screenshots from the cam. Or like my favorite is the people who save the videos from the cam. Like sometimes they film the videos on their iPhone, from the computer.
Right.
Yeah, it's so glorious. I love it.
That's too much, but
I love it. It's extra is what the kids would say, right? Isn't that the slang word for that?
What?
Extra. You've never heard that?
I'm not down with all the hip kids.
Yeah, I'm not down with all of it, but I think that's the word. The word on the children use these days.
Where did I hear that
on BuzzFeed. That's like a common slang word on BuzzFeed. Yeah. I like BuzzFeed because I get quality news reporting mixed with silly quizzes and ridiculous updates.
I do not agree with anything she just said.
Yeah, but that's why I said I like BuzzFeed.
That's the good thing about this show. You can get different opinions.
That's right.
We can agree to disagree.
Exactly. So chances are you'll agree with one of us.
Yeah. So. And if you don't, that's okay too.
That's okay too. Why are you listening if you don't? No, I'm just I'm just kidding. We love you, listeners.
Yes. So let's move on to some nerdy topics.
Okay.
We have a lot to cover.
We do. We do.
So the first thing I want to talk about, kind of sad news. Joanne Lee, the wife of Stan Lee, passed away.
That is so
sad.
She was
93, I think. Yeah,
and
she
you know
was
93. What? Just this week, before you had told me she passed away, I saw something about how they had been married for 70 years.
Yeah.
70.
Yeah.
70 years.
Stories about them are so awesome.
They're and so sweet, the two of them.
I feel so sorry. I know they're getting old. And,
I know. He stands in his 90s, too. I know.
Yeah, who knows how much longer he'll be with us. But, I know. I hate to think about it. But
well, I know, because you know what? Sometimes when old couples have been married for so long and one goes, the other one kind of loses their will to live, and they end up going pretty soon, too. Yeah. So.
I read this most awesome story about her, though.
Tell me, because I didn't really read that much about her.
So basically, Stan Lee was kind of frustrated with comic books, and he was like, "You know what? I hate writing these books. I don't like all the story." And his wife Joanne was like, "Well, why don't you write? If you're gonna quit, write one comic book the way you want to write it, and then at least you can say that you've like done, you know, you've done what you want to do, and you just do one comic book." And that was the Fantastic Four.
Oh wow!
Which ended up launching like the new age of comic books.
Wow!
So she was directly a vital influencer for the whole Silver Age of comic books.
Wow, that
Silver Age,
awesome.
I believe, is the start. With Fantastic Four. That was the start of like the more
modern comics, I guess.
There was like the Golden Age superheroes, but those kind of died out, and then it became all westerns for a while.
I didn't realize there was such a gap between Golden Age and Silver Age.
There's a really Marvel cover. The Marvel history book covered it really well. Where there was like a Golden Age in the 50s, or I think it was like 40s and 50s.
Because I remember there was Golden Age Flash,
there was like Golden Age.
Like the World War II stuff.
That was like the original Captain America.
Right, like the super patriotic, super American,
I guess. Flash and Superman and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
And those kind of fell out of favor for a long time between the 40s and the 60s.
I didn't realize that.
And it was more like horror and westerns were like the big comic books. And then when Stan Lee wrote Fantastic Four, and then that became like the Silver Age of like the new, more modern superheroes that we got with like that was.
So I didn't realize that Stan Lee relaunched that, and I didn't realize that. Him
and his team like that's started cool. the whole like Fantastic Four, Spider-Man.
Well, I know he created most of the Marvel popular Hulk ones that we know and love today, but I didn't realize he had like started the whole era. Like, that's kind of really interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of other people worked on those books too.
But I mean, he was like an innovator of ideas, I guess.
Yeah. So that leads us up to Spider-Man Homecoming.
Okay, I have to say, one of my favorite things was that they played the Spider-Man cartoon theme song as the theme music at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, yeah, that was
like
an
orchestral version of it. Loved it. I was like, you know, this is going to be a good movie. Which one I'm talking about. Yeah. Spider-Man.
Yeah, so
does just, whatever a spider
so
can.
Just so you understand where we're coming from, I am a big Spider-Man fan. I've been reading Spider-Man comic books since I was a little 15-year-old kid. I'm 39 now, so a long time.
And so Matt really knows his Spider-Man history.
I started reading
Spider-Man.
Like, he
knows the authenticity of the comics.
I started reading in the 90s. More recently, I've gotten into the older, like the first 100 issue, the Stan Lee.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you've been
Stan
collecting
Lee Ditka run, which whoever wrote this movie was a big fan of those.
Okay.
I've read all of the Ultimate Spider-Man, a lot of the Miles Morales Spider-Man. So I know the history. Going into this, I'm a Spider-Man fan.
Yes.
And I got to say, that doesn't mean I'm going to like it automatically, because the Amazing Spider-Man and Amazing Spider-Man 2 were garbage. Like, Amazing Spider-Man was okay.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing Spider-Man 2 was really garbage. It was just a bad
movie. Were the most recent movies,
Those were, reboots that they did. The first one was, like, kind of okay. It's like, you might be able to do something good with this. And the second one was just a money grab, really, it felt like. And Andrew Garfield, he was funny as Spider-Man, but I never really believed him as Peter Parker. He came across as too much of a trendy kid. Mm-hmm. Like, there's like scenes of him skateboarding, and it's like you never got the sense that he was a nerd.
Yeah, now, and that's like the definition of Peter Parker.
Tom Holland, he is a nerd.
Yes. Like
you get the sense.
Oh, he did a great job with that.
His iteration of Spider-Man really feels like Spider-Man to me.
Like, and I loved at the now, spoiler alert, because we always give spoilers. I loved at the beginning how he was like making a little iPhone video log of him as Spider-Man when Iron Man, right from Civil War, when Iron Man came to get him. And
because the first thing you see after the intro is like, a film by Peter Parker.
Yeah.
And it shows like his take on the events of Civil War leading up to him coming home.
Yeah, and he's got like his selfies and his little videos and stuff. And I thought that was really funny. Mm-hmm. And I think it also really defined him as a character, because he's like the kind of person who's nerdy enough to do that, and like who's impressed enough by all the superheroes he's interacting with.
Now, I've heard some negative reviews of this film, basically.
Why? What are they saying?
Well, the gist I got of what the people said was that it was boring, or it was slow paced, or it didn't feel like a superhero. I think you said one critic said it didn't feel like a superhero.
One critic that I saw said, "Oh, this is more like a teeny bopper high school movie than like a superhero film." And I'm like, "That's what Spider-Man is. Hello." Like that means they got it right.
It's not teeny bopper.
No, it wasn't really teeny bopper either,
it took a lot of different iterations, cuz it's kind of set him at the age that the Ultimate Spider-Man was, because when they did Ultimate Spider-Man starting in the 90s, I believe that was Eric Bagley was doing the art for that. But I'm trying to remember. I think it was written by Bendis, but I'm not exactly sure.
Okay.
Ultimate. But that was a really good kind of reboot of Spider-Man. And what they did was they took him and made him younger and put him in high school and had him interacting with a lot of the characters were a lot younger. May was younger.
Right.
May wasn't as young as she was in this film.
Yeah.
But they took that and there's just so many great nods to Spider-Man history, and they still managed to keep it fresh and interesting. And like there's points in the movie, like when he opened the door and he realized that
Michael Keaton's
character, the Vulture, was Liz's dad. I was like,
I know.
I was like, I didn't expect that. I was like, that's really cool. And the way they did, like the Vulture had a great arc throughout the whole movie.
I enjoyed him.
And I like that, like all the enemies in the movie were not like, they kind of took the Marvel tradition of being complex characters. They weren't just straight up like Loki's. Is a bad guy because he's a bad guy, and he's bad things because he's bad.
Right.
Like they had really good, and they had Miles Morales' uncle in it, played by
Donald Glover.
Which was a nod to when people want Donald Glover to play Spider-Man.
I forgot that there was a whole thing. I remember that now that you say that, but I forgot that was a thing. Now, I think it's good they had him then as the uncle, because I honestly feel like he's too old to be Spider-Man.
He's definitely too old to be Miles Morales, because Miles Morales...
I don't even know about Miles, but I mean, he's just too old to be any Spider-Man, because I feel like it's good to have like the kind of geeky high 30s. School.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Miles Morales was younger than Peter Parker.
Yeah, so, that's what I'm saying.
So like, he was... Although... I don't remember if he was 15 or 14 when he started being Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But yeah, they kind of have it. Donald Glover plays a petty crook. Basically, he's trying to buy guns off Vulture's gang.
Right.
And then he's like, oh man, I got a nephew that lives here. I want to help you. And that was a reference to Miles Morales. And it's just, they took a lot of it problem with like Amazing Spider-Man when they were doing it was like they took a lot of stuff and they just ripped it directly out of the comic books, the death of Gwen Stacy, which was like it felt like meaningless because you knew what was going to happen for the whole movie.
And
the scene played out exactly as it did in the comic book. So it was
was that from the second movie or that
was from
movie?
Amazing Spider-Man 2 but this was like so cool because like you kind of like looking back on it, you kind of realize Liz is kind of the Gwen character. And like that scene when he rescues her from the Washington Monument.
Yeah.
That's a lot like when she, it's similar to like her death scene basically in the
like Gwen's death scene.
It was a really cool scene where he's like rescuing her and then they had the scene where he fights the Vulture and he gets pinned under the rubble. which was like a direct visual reference to the sequence in Spider-Man 33, where he's basically has a very similar kind of conflict where like he's trying to get this like cure for Aunt May, and he's like fighting in Dr. Octopus's like underground lair or something. He gets pinned in a similar, mm-hmm. similar way. And he's got to basically go through this whole turmoil trying mm-hmm. to, you know, with like, you know, is he strong enough? Is he
to get out?
Can he be the hero that he needs to be?
Uh-huh.
You know, and it was so cool to see that on the screen. And I was like, but again, it's not a direct, like they're not just taking scenes from different comic books and putting them into the movie. They're taking like the spirit of those things,
inspiration,
and translating that into something new, which is so cool to see as a comic book fan and just a Spider-Man fan in general, mm-hmm. to see that kind of stuff. And like in the movie, like, yeah, it was slower paced than Avengers 2, but like Avengers 2 was kind of a mess, honestly. Like,
yeah,
you never had time to get to know any of the characters in that movie, where in this movie, like, you really get to feel like who Spider-Man is as a hero, you know, and like his kind of like, because this is really a story about him kind of coming into his own, just figuring out what kind of hero he's going to be.
Right.
You know, is he going to be an Avenger, or is he going to be a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man that cares about the bodega that gets trashed and, you know, is saving people's cats and stuff like that. And it was just cool to see that kind of play out, you know, in such a cool way. And
yeah. Well, and I'm a huge Michael Keaton fan, and you know, the Michael Keaton Batman movie is very cheesy, but I still love it. And I just loved like all of his character as the Vulture. Like, I felt like the inspiration from him as Batman, like especially like the first time that they showed him with the wings on, like it was clearly an homage to him in the Batman suit, like coming down from the ceiling with the wings and all of that. I loved it. And then I think there was also like some nods to him as Birdman, which of course was kind of like interpreting him as Batman. So, you know, I loved him as the villain. I loved that he was in the movie and he had such a big role in it. And I was having a lot of fun with all the little references from that.
Well, Michael Keaton is just such a good actor, and he's so strong in any role you put him in. He was just great as the Vulture. And I liked his character. I like how like damage control kind of ruined his life a little bit, because like he had put all that money into the salvage operation and they just came in and took it over.
And so, I felt like that was kind of true to life, because it was like he had won the contract and then like this new government agency has just cropped up and they take it over and it's like, screw the little guy, you know.
It's like,
so I thought that was very
realistic.
Villains
don't just come out of nowhere. They're not, people aren't just bad because some people are bad and some people are good. I mean, and so it was great to see that. And like at the end where he doesn't give up, you know, Spider-Man's identity because he cares about his family and he recognizes he's not a bad kid and he's trying to do the right thing. And I think he maybe regrets the path that he went down on a little bit.
Maybe. I wasn't sure I bought him not giving the name up, to be 100% honest.
Well, I mean, it was, you really think it was because of his family.
Well, I don't know though, because it's like, he was going to kill him before then. I mean, yeah, Peter just saved his life. And even when he was trying to kill him, Peter saved his life. But I don't know that...
He never really seemed to want to kill him because he...
No, he gave him a way out.
He gave him a way out. And even when he...
But he, know, was when he was completely
when he
trying
pinned him
to kill
under
him,
the
though.
Rubble, like he wasn't
no.
like
he was
putting a gun
to
his
him.
Head and shooting him. Like,
he was killing him. Baby, he was killing him.
Well, I mean, he wasn't. I feel like he was conflicted about it, and I felt from watching the movie, I could see that kind of playing out on the screen.
Well, here's the thing: I could see that he was conflicted because his daughter liked him, and also because he had saved his daughter's life. To me, that was the source of the conflict. But it wasn't a conflict that he didn't want to kill a teenage kid. He really would have been quite happy to kill Spider-Man, I think. And then at the end of the movie, he was legitimately trying to kill him after he got buried under the rubble. I mean, first of all, he was killing him when he got buried under the rubble, and then he tried to kill him again at the end of the movie. So
let me tell you why.
Hold on. I'm just not convinced that he would be so quick to give up revenge, even though Peter saved his life. Like, I don't know that the act of Peter saving his life would really convince him to let him live.
Yeah, I think there's a struggle there. And the reason why I kind of like the way that they had it play out is because Spider-Man is one of those heroes that's like constantly trying to actually reform his nemesis is.
Okay.
Nemesis. What's the plural nemesis?
Nemesis.
Anyways, so nemesis, so he's always like modern day comic book Peter Parker has got a lot of his ex-villains like working at his company because he is dedicated to try and reform people. And that's why I kind of like that. Like,
well, I liked that it. I liked it from Peter's perspective. I thought that was very much something that Peter would try to do. But yeah. I just question whether this character would really have accepted that sacrifice of and not given his name up and things like that. So yeah, I don't know about that.
I liked it. I thought it was cool. I thought it was much better than a lot of like the way they it was handled in some of the Amazing Spider-Man movies that you had characters that liked him 1 minute and then the next minute wanted to kill him and
I didn't see those two movies. So.
Yeah, I think if you watch the two Amazing Spider-Man movies, you can appreciate this even more because those were so bad. They were really terrible.
Well, I thought this movie was good. Don't get me wrong. I really liked this movie. That's just the one little thing at the end that I didn't necessarily complain about.
I liked that. And I thought the pacing of the movie was good.
Yeah, I could not see complaints about the pacing. I thought the pacing was just fine. I really didn't think it was slow. I thought it was
There were so many great Spider-Man moments, like how he keeps losing his backpack, and you know when he's like trapped in that thing, and he's like talking to the suit for in this montage, he's like, "How long has it been?" And it's like 37 minutes. He's like, "Oh my god!"
Yeah, that was cute. That was very cute.
Yeah, it's just such a great movie. If you haven't seen it, hopefully you haven't listened this far because we just spoiled the whole movie for you. Go see it. It's amazing. Spider-Man film, and it's an amazing superhero film. It's a great addition to the Marvel universe. I hope they keep making movies like this and Guardians of the Galaxy and less like Avengers 2.
Yeah.
Yes. Avengers 2, you're just trying to do too much. You're doing too much in too little time.
I think they're in a good direction because Civil War was good. You know, I think they've kind of moved away from Avengers 2 already. So
I didn't put this on the outline. Did you see the trailer for the Inhumans show?
I saw it a while ago.
Did we talk about that last week?
Or last episode? I think we talked about it one episode, yeah.
Yeah, I think we did.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, hopefully that'll be good. We'll see.
Yeah. Well,
wait, it was some terrible person doing it, wasn't it? Someone we don't like?
Yeah, it was the guy who did the Iron Fist.
Yeah, it's going to be terrible. Yeah, it is going to be terrible. Sorry. It's going to suck. All right, well, plan ahead for that disappointment. We'll still watch it, but
speaking of bad television shows, we finished Supergirl season 2.
Yeah, yeah. I was very displeased that they shot Mon-El off into space. It was unbelievable, but hey, that's par for the course.
It actually follows
Supergirl.
The comic books, though.
Yeah, it does happen in the comic books. Yeah,
we had to look that up because we're not as familiar with DC Comics. But
no, the thing is, what bothered me the most about it was that Kara seemed very unlikable this season. She was very arrogant. She had a lot of issues, and I loved the balance of her with Mon-El because Mon-El called her out on all of that. And
I wish everybody in that show would be calling her out.
Yeah, seriously. But I mean, Mon-El was perfect for her, and they were a great on-screen couple. He really balanced her unlikableness because it made it a little more tolerable to have somebody actually call her on her stuff.
Yeah, I think this show is constantly battling with its bad writing, and I feel character Mon-El ended up likable because they tried writers were trying to make him unlikable.
Well, I don't know if that's why he ended up likable. I think he ended up likable because he changed.
Yeah, I think that's
he
true
changed for
too,
the better.
But like, I got the sense that like. They didn't realize that like some of the stuff they had Kara doing was really inconsistent, and some of it was just straight up kind of bad behavior on her part. And like people would just like apologize to her when she would do kind of skeezy, like just act weirdly or like. Trying to not use bad words to describe the way she
acted.
We're
trying to keep
this
PG.
In this show.
She was very difficult and like, right. Then
arrogant
Alex,
a lot of the
she
times.
Was codependent. Like, oh, Alex, you abandoned me for your girlfriend. How dare you? And it's like, then Alex ends up apologizing to her.
Arrogant,
like, hello,
needy.
You don't have to apologize. So, yeah. So I like that Mon-El really balanced her with all of that. And I hope he's not permanently gone. because yeah. I just honestly feel like they were such a good couple on screen. I enjoyed watching them, and I don't feel like that would get boring, that relationship, because they do kind of butt heads and balance each other. So yeah. I hope they bring him back quickly, and I hope they're not going to try to replace him with some other lame boyfriend who really doesn't balance her well and work for her.
I mean, I don't think she has to have a boyfriend for the show.
She doesn't, like, but the thing is, I feel like she has to have Mon-El to make her at least tolerable. I felt like without Mon-El, she was
She needs somebody mad. To call her out is the problem.
Well,
A lot of the other characters have not been doing that. And
exactly.
It's like there's times where they'd like apologize to her. I'm like, why are you apologizing? She was bad. She was nasty. Nasty to you. Why?
Right, exactly.
She was arrogant and selfish. Like,
right, exactly. I don't know. I would like for them to bring him back because I felt like that was a really good dynamic and it made the show much more enjoyable to watch.
He was another really good. It's bad writing saved by good actors and good characters.
Yeah. I mean, I know what you're saying. It's a difficult show. It's a difficult show to watch. I mean, it's tolerable by the little moments in it, but
it's like cringy writing with characters that you really like. So it's like you're sticking around for the characters. Flash is a little bit like that, but the writing's quite a bit better, I think.
The writing has been really good on Flash. The last season I didn't love that much, but I mean, overall, the Flash was like super high quality.
Flash just needs to come up with a different arc for next season, and rather than unbeatable bad guy that you talk about for the whole season, you have a mystery, you have a reveal of that hero, and then you fight him for the last three or four episodes. Like, it's kind of like you need to do something different.
Yeah,
do anything other than that.
Right.
And you'll be good.
Right.
Even if you don't have an overarching story, that's fine.
That's not fine. But I mean, look what happened with Doctor Who, the first two seasons of Capaldi, when they didn't have a good overarching storyline.
It wasn't because they weren't trying. It's just because
they weren't trying.
Yeah.
It was. But anyway, we don't need to go dishing all about Doctor Who again. We've already been there on multiple podcasts.
And let's see. We watched. So we rewatched Aliens. We watched the director's cut.
We did. We rewatched Aliens. Now, I had forgotten most of what happened in that movie, just like I had forgotten most of what happened in the first one. So I really enjoyed rewatching it. I thought the director's cut was great. I think it didn't seem slow at all or overdone. And I think, and I like that James Cameron introduced it on the DVD we watched beforehand, saying that the reason why they had cut it down was because at that time Hollywood felt like your movie had to be 90 minutes and you couldn't make a movie that was 2.5 hours long.
I wish every director would do that for the director's cut and let me know if I should, like, because that kind of tells me
to,
like,
explain why they're having a director's cut. Well, that might cue you in if you should be watching the movie, the theatrical release, instead, because sometimes the director's cut is way worse.
Well, I know the director's cut for Blade Runner I did not like. I saw the director's cut first of Blade Runner and I didn't like it. And then I watched the original and I was like, this makes so much more sense with the narration. Because the director's cut of Blade Runner.
I don't think I've watched the director's cut for Blade Runner because
it's not good.
Yeah, that's why I didn't watch it.
He took out all of his narration.
Uh-huh.
Because he didn't want to have the narration in the first place, I guess.
No, the studio had forced him to. Yeah.
But the narration really kept you interested in the movie because you kind of had a sight into this guy's head about what was going on, because without it, it's just kind of a confusing.
Well, and that's what surprised me about this director's cut for Aliens, because 99% of the time the director's cut is not better, because the studio needed to have that chain on the director in order to get a good movie out, because like with George Lucas, like, you just cannot trust these directors sometimes.
I think it can go either way. I think people sometimes give credit, too much credit to directors for a movie, and sometimes they don't give enough credit to directors.
Yeah, it depends, because like for this movie, I really appreciated what James Cameron said, how he felt like it was like this slow, what do you call it, a slow highway to hell or a slow nightmare journey to hell, something like that. And I agreed with him. Like, I think all the tension and all the drama that you had from every moment in the movie built up to the finale, and it was great. So
yeah,
but I really enjoyed, the second one quite a bit. So now, what do we have left? There's Is Resurrection the next one, or is there another
Aliens
one?
3.
There is an Aliens 3.
Which is, okay. I think is the one written by Joss Whedon, actually.
Really? Yeah. He wrote one, too? All these people working on 3. Aliens that I did not remember
Joss Whedon wrote it.
Aliens.
Here's another kicker. It's directed by David Fincher.
Now, what else has he directed?
Fight Club.
Oh, I love Fight Club.
Yeah.
So what do you think of Aliens 3 before we watch it? Is it one that you like, or you don't like it?
I'm sorry. I'm wrong. It's Alien Resurrection. It was written by Joss Whedon.
Oh, okay. Alien Resurrection.
Alien 3 is directed by David Fincher, and it's written by a bunch of people I'd never heard of.
Okay. Now, in your opinion, is Alien 3 one that you like or not really?
It doesn't really compare to the first two. It's kind of like...
Because again, I don't remember it. I've seen it, don't remember.
What I remember of it is it being kind of cheesy and kind of dumb and like.
Now Ripley is in that one again.
Yeah, Ripley dies at the end of this one.
Right, and then in Resurrection they bring her back. Right.
Well, they clone her.
Yeah, but she's the Sigourney Weaver again.
Yeah, it's Sigourney Weaver again.
Yeah.
I think I like Resurrection more than Alien 3. I feel like Alien 3 was just kind of like a cash grab of a movie.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, you know. I don't know.
Yeah,
I like,
by the time you get to the third installation of something that maybe wasn't even originally intended to have three parts, like, yeah, you really have to have a good reason.
Well, they named the first one Alien and then Aliens,
right.
And they were like, well, we can't name it Aliens. Like, we can't just keep adding S's onto it. That won't work.
Yeah, so, I mean, we'll have to rewatch it, and then I'll let y'all know what I think after we rewatch it, because I don't remember it.
Yeah, like, I think it takes place on like a penal colony or something. Like the ship crashes on a penal colony or something like
Interesting.
That.
Interesting. Okay.
I don't know. Like I'm not super excited about watching the rest of them.
Yeah. We'll get to them eventually.
The first two are the best. You've got to watch Prometheus. We're going to have to do another one talking
Prometheus
about Prometheus.
Is bad, though. You've told me how bad it is.
We can talk about how bad it is. Mm. And you've already seen Covenant.
I've seen the new one.
So you got to see the prequel to
the prequel of the horror.
I wish people.
The poorly made.
Can I just say, stop doing prequels. Like
say it. I don't know if anyone's gonna.
No one's
gonna listen to you.
I know no one's listening to me. But just stop. So have you seen you've seen the trailer for the new Star Trek Discovery?
The TV show?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it was in front of one of the movies we watched.
Yeah, and I've seen it anyway. So
Originally, my understanding was that this was going to take place in the Star Trek Prime universe, which I guess Prime refers to the TNG original series.
So the
that
original
universe
TV
that
shows.
Included Voyager and DS9.
Yeah.
Apparently, that's no longer true. It's going to take place in the movie universe.
Okay.
That's why the Klingons look different than they do
in
the Prime universe. And so I'm not as excited. It's also, they're saying it's a prequel, but I think it was supposed to be a prequel when it was going to be in the Prime universe, and then it would have to be a prequel. But I guess now it's just going to be taking place after the new movies, I guess.
Okay.
I don't know. I'll still watch it. Hopefully it'll be good.
Yeah, watch it too. I mean, we'll watch it together, but I don't know. Star Trek in my mind hasn't been very good for quite a long time. So I'm not.
I think Voyager.
I didn't like Voyager at all.
I mean, to me, it was the last one that kept kind of the spirit of, I guess Enterprise kind of tried but failed terribly.
Enterprise was way too boring. There was like nothing happened in any of the episodes.
I think Enterprise was just hurt by the fact that it was a prequel and they were like trying to like.
No, I think it was I always criticize the writing, but that's because it's true. I mean, if you don't start with good writing, you're not going anywhere.
Did you ever see any of the Mirror Mirror episodes of Enterprise?
No, I quit after like two episodes of it.
The Mirror, you might want to check out just the Mirror Mirror in the finale, because the finale actually has Jonathan Franks in it.
Yeah, but I don't care. I just feel like I feel like I'm going to stick to my original series, my TNG and my DS9 prior to Worf.
Well, the only reason I say check out the last episode is because it takes place in the Next Generation, and you've got Jonathan Franks it's basically Jonathan Franks is playing a hologram of what happened to them.
Oh.
So, and it's got Deanna Troi's in it.
But you know what? Like, I didn't like any of the movies from The Next Generation. So I don't know that I would like that. because I really
there's a reason the movies were not consistent with this Next Generation TV show, but I thought it was a nice throwback to the Next Generation TV show.
Well, I don't know. It was not really my cup of tea. So I don't know. I mean, I'll probably watch at least the first couple episodes of this new series to see if it's any good, but I have my doubts.
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm not going to judge it till I see it, but I'm not real hopeful right now.
That's exactly it. I'm not hopeful.
Yeah.
I'll hold judgment until I see it, but
I'm excited for the upcoming Marvel movies now. We got Thor coming out soon, right?
Yeah, Thor's this fall sometime. 3. I think November, maybe.
I'm really excited for Thor 3, especially after I found out the director from... So it's November 3rd.
Okay.
It's going to be Thor 3. And it's got the Hulk. It looks like they're going to have some Planet Hulk stuff going on.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm
so excited.
No, I'm excited. I'm excited about the Thor movie. I'm hoping that's going to be pretty good.
Yeah. Anything else we got to talk about this week? Or?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's been kind of a light week other than Spider-Man.
Yeah, Spider-Man. We've been watching Stargate SG-1.
Yeah, we're slowly finishing that series up.
Yeah, now Matt had seen it before, but I hadn't seen it, so we've been watching it together.
We've kind of tapered off because the last two seasons are just not as good as the first
eight. We're at the seasons where, what's his name? Jack. What's the character he plays? What's the actor's name?
Jack O'Neill.
Yeah, but what's the actor's name?
Richard Dean Anderson.
Yeah, he's not on the show anymore. So, yeah, there's been some real hit or miss episodes. Like, there's some that have been well done. And the overarching story, I feel like, is actually pretty good.
I feel like they still had the good writers from it. It's just...
As some of them.
Kinda, like I think the overall story kind of ended at the end of season 8. And they just kind of were, like, stumbling to figure out what to do after that.
I feel like maybe the story with the original team ended. Like, actually, one of the things I've liked about it is that they've gone ahead and said, all right, what happens now that there's a power vacuum in the universe? And I actually think that was very clever that they addressed it. I thought it was pretty clever that they were addressing what was going on with the Jaffa, that there was some civil war type tensions and like a struggle for power and leadership and things like that. Mm-hmm. I like the Ori storyline because I thought that was interesting to have a new threat come into the galaxy. But, you know, like I said, there have been... I feel like it's obviously it's not as tight with the team because it was really a team with Jack. And without Jack there, it's not.
Yeah, he was just.
Everybody is kind of like. It kind of was like the last couple seasons of Friends where everybody is continuing to be themselves and trying to coast on that.
I think the reason for that, I think Jack was really your ultimate protagonist because he is everybody. He is the common guy who comes in and says. Right. All this mumbo jumbo stuff is dumb and I don't understand what's going on. So explain it to me. And he was like the perfect protagonist to have in a science fiction movie where how many times in that show we'd be watching, we would say something.
Yeah. And then his character would say it.
It's like,
thing. Oh yeah. It was funny.
That's what made his character so amazing. It's just that he was the audience really.
Exactly.
And he said what was on everybody's mind. Exactly. And he really brought the show down to earth and like made it relatable in a way when you're like talking all this science mumbo jumbo and you're like, I don't really know what any of that means. And then Jack says, can you explain that to me in English, please? You know?
Like, yeah. And like he would give the sarcastic responses and, you know, everything fun. And I mean, they're trying to have the new guy do that. But I think part of it was the chemistry between the original four and you were learning who they were as characters. And now it's kind of like there's no new arcs for Sam. There's no new arcs for Daniel. There's no new arcs for Teal'c. It's just kind of like, you know, it's almost like their stories have finished, even though the universe continues on.
Yeah. And that's kind of the feeling of the last.
And so it's still kind of enjoyable because, it's more of the characters who you already know and love. But it's not quite as good because they're not creating those characters anymore. It's just kind of like, they're coasting. But it's still enjoyable to watch. We're going to watch the end of the series,
obviously.
We're going
to finish it.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, we are. One day. We always pause that one when one of like our current series gets new episodes. And then we, watch that one.
Yeah, we were watching and then Supergirl came out on Netflix.
Right. And so we paused that. Put that on hold again for Supergirl.
Now we're back to watching it because we don't have.
Yeah, because we don't have anything
else to watch right
new to watch at the moment. I know.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. You know, if you enjoy the podcast, you want to support us, please think about donating to one of our charities.
And this week, of course, we have the third one with the Eagle Cam, trying to get a new Eagle Cam. But aside from that, we have Small Angels Rescue, which is the nonprofit no-kill volunteer organization that rescues the gerbils, the guinea pigs, the hamsters, the mice, and our favorites, the ratties, whom we are fosters with them, foster ratty parents with them.
Yeah, and Extra Life unites thousands of players around the world in a 24-hour gaming marathon to support Children's Miracle Network hospitals. And this year, I'll be doing it in October sometime.
Yeah, so Matt does a stream, which is 24 hours total, not 24 hours.
This year, I tried to do 24 hours the past couple of years, and I haven't been making it. We're gonna do two streams back to back. I'm thinking maybe just take the whole week of October off, do it
like a weekend. Yeah.
Maybe do it the 28th and the 29th of October.
That'd be good. Yep, so, and so all the money raised from that goes directly to patient care at our Washington, D.C. Children's Hospital.
Yep, and thanks everybody for listening.
Yep, we'll see you next time. Bye.